Dear Shooter, you all know him. He has been our wise and seasoned guide through the firearms industry for decades. But have you met Michael when there are no sponsors? And oh my God, the old fashions were flowing. Take a listen to Michael Bain as he takes over the Dear Shooter podcast. Unrestrained, unsupervised, and unleashed.
It's not about protecting the stupid. It's just, it is what it is.
I don't know if you know this, but I'm a self-identifying llama. and it's because I have a quick temper and I like to spit.
You are not safe and you are not sacred and you're both liars.
We're talking about firearms, y'all. Keep it clean.
I can hide one under there.
One what? I want to know.
I looked like I got ran over by a paint truck on the way to Sherwin-Williams and then backed over by the short bus.
You know, let's talk about the modern trends in transsexual transitions.
Welcome to the Dear Shooter podcast. Dear Shooter is brought to you by WyoTech, empowerment through self-reliance, and by Lucid Optics, on target, under budget.
Put me off,
yeah.
And they said, do you have an issue? And I said, I'm transitioning.
Hey. All right.
Hi.
Well.
So, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, it's like it's my first time.
Dear Shooter, you know, location B.
I'm just excited to be here.
Oh, my God. It's going to be one of those nights already.
What the fuck? All
right. There's something wrong with the situation right out of the gate. Michael does not have a drink.
I know, and it's really terrifying to me.
Oh, Jesus.
Especially when we're surrounded by...
Will you go hunt Johnny down and get Michael a drink?
An old-fashioned.
There we go.
A perfect, perfect old-fashioned.
A perfect old-fashioned.
I would say the old-fashioned that he mixed me the other night would be as close to a perfect old-fashioned as I've ever had.
Johnny does a good job. He really does.
He does.
Yeah, there's a reason we hired him.
And that was...
That's a great question. I'll get back
He's
to you.
He's transitioning.
The modern trends and... How did you say that?
Did I make something else up and I forgot?
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
That was great.
Yes. Yeah. And clearly he doesn't listen to the podcast because it's in every intro now.
That would scare me even more than anything else. It's like, did I say that? Is it actionable?
No. No, it is not actionable. You were calling for a conversation to talk about, and you had had a couple.
Had I?
You had.
That's a shock.
It was quite entertaining.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Did you know that next month I'm cooking dinner for 100 people at Gunsight?
What? When did you get into catering?
When did you get into cooking?
He's always been a cook. He's a damn good cook.
I went to cooking school briefly, and it was like... It was kind of a special private class, and it was all women. It was like joining a sorority where you cooked really good food. And we had a really, like, high zoot chef, a Michelin chef type guy. And we had tests, and we had, and it was like I apprenticed for 2 nights in his restaurant, and it was like television. It was like all those awful, like cooking shows, they were screaming, and I was like making white sauce. I'm like, please God, don't let the sauce separate. Oh God, he'll hit me, it'll hurt. And I thought, wow, I'm going to go back to training. I mean, it's just safer.
I mean, they yell at you just as much, but it's not near as dangerous.
Well, you know, they have pots and pans.
And knives.
Yeah, sharp stuff in the kitchen, they can hurt you.
I mean, that's fair. Yeah, fair enough. I was thinking you were on like a Martha Stewart thing and trying to get with them, so
wouldn't
I wasn't
that be great?
Really sure.
Yeah. Join me while we make a lovely dandelion sundae.
Yikes.
Oh, God, I could see it now, how you would... Oh, I want to see you produce that and see what that turns into.
I'm doing at Gunsight, it's for the Pat Rogers Memorial Revolver Roundup. And it was only a few people for dinner last year. And I said, yeah, I'll work with you guys next year. We'll do it. And 100 people signed up. So I'm doing designer hot dogs, Chicago hot dogs, or your choice, or beer-soaked wild boar hot dogs. Ooh. With onions and peppers, maybe jalapenos on top. My own signature baked beans made with my own barbecue sauce that I make out of my own spices, and then probably potato chips. What the hell? We'll wrap it up.
What the hell? If you're going to go there, I mean, why pull out all the stops?
Yeah, we'll just go. We may go all the way with it. And this is, hold on. It's perfect.
We're getting interrupted here.
He said he spit in it twice just for you.
Uh-oh.
That would be your drink, not mine.
I poured my own, so I'm safe.
But so, yeah, I'm looking forward to it, actually. We'll go out, shoot revolvers a bunch, train with revolvers for a few days, and then I'll frenetically cook like a crab. I think we're going to do, like, maybe a live Facebook if I'm not thrown off Facebook like I usually am, if I'm still there.
So designer hot dogs for 100. So that's like, what, 150 hot dogs you got to make?
150 weenies.
You giggle with that. It's creepy and weird all at the same time.
The smile that came with it, too, it kind of reminded me of something in the Marine Corps, but I really just don't want to bring back those memories anymore.
I'm so glad. What do they say about the Navy? 300 men go out, 150 couples come back.
Oh, God. Yep, that's about accurate.
Hey, if you're deployed, I understand it's not gay.
No, only if you have your socks on.
That must be a Navy thing.
Yeah, that's 100% a Navy thing, not a Marine Corps thing.
But isn't the Marine Corps a division of the Navy?
You shut your mouth.
You knew where I said it. Yeah, you knew I was headed with that.
You shut your mouth.
All right.
But we certainly don't disparage anyone for... Well, maybe we disparage some people. It's just... I'm trying to think of what we don't disparage.
It's a term of endearment around here. So, yeah.
Oh, 100%.
But anyway, so, you know, unfortunately the event at Gunsight is sold out, or I say drop by for a designer hot dog and chips.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
no.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, sounds like you may need some whiskey, so there is a way in.
You know, we should talk. Let's talk.
No, wait a second. It was sold out a second ago, and this guy's got a little bit of whiskey company, and all of a sudden, you should talk.
The world is hopelessly crooked, isn't it?
Isn't it, though?
Can you be bribed? You know, people who tell me they can't be bribed have just not been bribed at a high enough level yet.
Or offered the right thing.
Right.
That's right.
We have penguins. You know?
Well, fuck, I'm in.
Yeah. See, what are you going to say?
I'm easy. You know? I mean, penguins. That's cool. Do they have knees?
No, and you know, I have a thing about penguins, right?
I did not know this.
I've actually hated penguins forever because they're always marching all over the place. There's all these like documentaries of penguins marching, and I'm like, sooner or later they're coming to your town. Hmm. All of them marching, thousands and thousands of penguins, penguin crap everywhere, making those little penguin noises. Somebody said, "Do you really not like penguins?" Well, you might as well not like something. I mean, penguins are as good as any.
If you have something to not like, penguins are pretty safe, Michael. You live in Colorado.
Well, I know, and I live up really high because I don't think penguins can really climb.
No, I wouldn't say that well. Oh, man.
That was the angry climbing penguin noise.
Well, I mean, the hand motion at the same time that he was doing was kind of just...
You know, I'll get emails. People are like, you know, my son's a penguin.
Why? Wait, what?
No.
Wow.
I get a lot of, you know, not as many. I get a lot of strange emails, you know, of people. And sometimes I'm reading and I'm thinking, like, this person needs to be committed really, really badly. They need to be off the street. You know, because I'm reading, and it just doesn't, sometimes it doesn't make any sense. And I think I may have told you last time, is that my favorite death threat, I got, you know, occasionally death threats, but my favorite death threat I ever got, the guy left his email address on it. And so it was really, like, grammatically bad. It was a lot of F words, and it described in some detail how he's going to, like, kill you, you stupid bastard, and your whole family. It went on and on. And I edited it. I went through and edited it and, you know, redlined it and did the whole thing on the death note. And I said, for example, I said, when you're threatening someone's life, grammar matters.
Oh, my goodness.
And I said, secondly, you need more imagination. When you say, I'm going to kill you and your family, I mean, how? Are you going to, like, set us on fire? Is a nuclear explosion? Are you going to set wolverines on us? I said, be specific and be artful. And I went through a whole page of, like, suggestions for writing the perfect death threat. And then I sent it back to the guy. And Like a month later, I got an email that says, "You really are an asshole."
Oh, great comeback.
I wouldn't even have argued that. I mean,
jeez,
like,
what a comeback.
Sure.
But I mean, it's fascinating that you put enough effort into a retort of a death threat to become an expert in writing a death threat.
So I'm ready now. Yeah. I mean, if I could just find somebody that I thought deserved a death threat that wasn't a penguin who doesn't have email, you know, it's but that was, I one serious death threat once, and I took it down to I was living up in the mountains. I took it to like the local cops. I said, "I would class this a credible death threat." And they look at it and said, "Yes, yeah, so what? Why'd you bring this to us, Michael?" I said, "So if there's a body in my front yard, I have a paper trail." And the guy starts laughing.
Yeah, I mean, that's accurate.
The problem with the death threat is they're warning you they're coming.
Yeah.
Which is an idiot move if anybody's ever listened to you, let alone knows you.
Well, you know, I'm not allowed to answer a lot of email because there are a lot of things on the internet, social media. My sweetie, who is smarter than me in every single way, she's like, years as a professional writer, she goes, "You answering other people's threats is like shooting fish in a barrel. You actually enjoy it, you know." And they end up going like, "What just happened? What just happened?"
They have no idea that, like, they were just called on the carpet for being dumb.
You just walked into a fan. And so she's like, "Before you post anything,
that's good.
You have to show me." So I'm like, "Oh, all right, all right." But I mean, the other thing is, I think it's weird, is that it and I think, you know, you agree, it takes a lot of energy to hate somebody, right?
Oh, 100%.
It's just, that's a lot of work, and it requires this huge chunk of your head to hate somebody.
True.
And there are people that hate me. And I get notes from them, and they're just like, "And you're just," and I'm thinking, like, you know, that energy could be turned to something useful. I don't know, street sweeping. You know?
Well, and you kind of should feel a little guilty because you're living in their head rent-free.
They really are. I really am. And it's just, it's an emotional set I don't understand. Partly because I have the attention span of, I don't know, say a penguin, an eight-year-old. Is that I can hate you really intensely for about, I don't know, a minute, maybe a minute 30 if I'm really, really on a bender.
Wow.
But
so you're an advanced goldfish.
Yeah, pretty much.
A really advanced goldfish, though. I mean,
so from 15 seconds all the way to minute 30.
Yeah, but that minute 30 is terrifying.
Oh, yeah, no, 100%. I wouldn't want to be on the other side of that. No.
I mean, there's fumes coming out of my ears and noses. I'm pawing the ground like a big buffalo. I'm like, "I'm good." And then it's like minute 30, minute 45. I'm like, "Who was that guy?"
Yeah, he wasn't worth the hate, was he?
No, it's just, but I think a minute hate works.
I mean, I got to tell you, to be somebody that got under your skin enough to have a minute 30 of Michael Bain hate, that's talent.
It's mostly people I've worked for, to be honest.
Oh, okay. All right, there we go.
Because sometimes, you know, when you 25 years of television producing. Certain phone calls from various management figures who are now gone, you'd pick up the phone and you'd go like, "Wow, you know, I've heard smarter comments from salad bars."
So they have taken just something that they saw that you've done in isolation and just wanting to pick it apart?
One executive who is, thank God, very long gone, he called me up and he goes, "How come you've never done a show about flood insurance?"
Interesting.
And I said, a couple of reasons. Number one, if you have to have flood insurance, you have to have flood insurance. Number two, you can only get it in one place from the government. I said, "That's it." He goes, "How come you haven't done a show about that?" Like, I have to go to the bathroom now, so I'm going to have to hang up.
The commercial spot takes longer to explain than the show would.
They would be like, "Yeah, but you know, it's always, or it's like, what was it? Oh, it was a consultant. It was a consultant who was a yogi who lived in the desert outside of 29 Palms and spent most of his time meditating. And he was hired to be my consultant on television shows that I did, which were about guns, violence, and hunting."
Oh, no.
And I met with the guy, and the guy's like, do you sleep at night knowing what you do? I said, like a baby. And then finally the guy reveals it. He goes, do you remember when you were doing the IDITA sport, which is a human-powered ultramarathon in Alaska in the winter, in February, right? And so I'm up there, like, you know, dragging a sled in the snow and all that kind of really happy stuff. He goes, do you remember, like, one morning you got up and you're out there rigging your sled and you're getting your survival stuff on the sled? I said, I remember that. He goes, you remember a cameraman came up to you and put a camera right there and gave you your chance to talk on television and said, how are you feeling? I said, I remember that. He goes, do you remember what you said? I said, go fuck yourself, you moron. And he goes, that was me.
Okay.
So he remembered what you said.
He remembered exactly. You know, it's like, did that drive you to be a yogi living in the desert outside of 29 Palms? I'm glad to have had that kind of effect on your life.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, you're talking about one of the largest military installations for the Marine Corps that the Army abandoned, and before that, the Air Force abandoned, and then the Marine Corps.
So what was
it
about the installation that they didn't want?
It's in the middle of nowhere.
It is
in
truly
the hottest place. It's a hellhole.
So why does the Marines want it?
Because it's a hellhole.
It's a hellhole.
All right.
And the Marine Corps only trains in specific locations for that. So you want the best of the best going in, getting trained in hell to go fight in hell.
Every single plant there has thorns that are trying to kill you.
Yep.
The cactuses try to kill you. If you climb the rocks, it's like climbing sandpaper.
Oh, it's awful.
And it like literally sands the skin off your fingers.
No, thank you.
Yeah, it's a fun time.
It's a lovely place in so many ways.
And Lake Bandini, let me tell you, you have to go to Lake Bandini when you're in 29 Palms. If you don't and you don't swim in it, you're not a Marine. I also wouldn't suggest that because it's a shit lake.
The last person that swam in it dissolved.
Pretty much, yeah. No, 100%.
Oh, God.
Yeah, no one actually swims in it. No one actually has done that I know of that survived. Let's put it that way.
So there's no vacation resort brochures for this place?
For Lake Bandini? Absolutely not.
Interesting.
Even when you get into, like, Joshua Tree, it's a great place to go to. But one story I put in a book is I was in Joshua Tree climbing rocks like an idiot. And there's a couple there, and it's an elderly couple, people my age, and they're outside a little camper, and they got a little camp stove going, and they got a little pot boiling on it and everything. I thought, how cute. And directly across from them in the same campsite were maybe like 25 L.A. gangbangers, and they had like Impalas jumping up and down and huge boombox music and everything. And these people were like grim. They were like, okay. We're making our tea. We have every right to be here. And I thought it was like Mike O'Day who died defending his right of way. You're right. You have every right to be there. Can 25 L.A. gangbangers really turn your camping trip bad? Yeah. Even if you got like rockets.
Two of those guys could make your camping trip go bad. 25 of them, it's a carnival.
They get that 25 of them, you could end up on a spit.
Yeah.
You know? But I use that as a kind of an example of just because you can do it and you're in the right, sometimes you need to maybe think like a second, is this something I really want to do? Do I really want to walk through this part of town? Mm. Do I really want to go to Aurora, Colorado? You know, and the answer is like, why would I go there?
I mean,
unless you're hunting Venezuelans.
I mean, it used to be a nice place.
It's been a long time.
25 years.
It's been a long time.
The United States used to be a nice place.
I mean, that's valid.
He has a point.
Yeah. I'm just going to shut up now.
It was a lot longer than 25 years ago, but yes.
It used to
for
be.
For Aurora?
The United States.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean.
Denver, I think, is pretty much hopeless. Since the last time Doc Holliday visited, the place has gone to hell.
Oh, geez. That's been a minute.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, up to 95, it wasn't bad. And then after 95, it started to fall downhill.
Yeah, but at 95, I mean, most of your noteworthy trouble stayed in Colfax.
It didn't even go off of Colfax. It was nice.
Right. I mean,
part of Colorado Boulevard was still dirt in 95.
True.
So,
I think I got there in like 96, 97 to Colorado, and it was still Colorado.
Yeah.
It hadn't yet turned into, you know, Venice Beach, Venice Beach East, you know? And there's still, like, I live in a red section of a blue state where, you can go to the general store in the town I live in and you see ranchers with guns on their hips. And nobody thinks that's odd except the tourist who's driving through who then runs screaming out the door, like, oh, no, what have they? But, most of the people in the store, they're ranchers. Ranchers are armed for all the obvious reasons. But it's...
Sidearm's just a tool.
It is.
It's just a simple tool.
And, you live in a place where there are lions and bears and all manner of beasties, including, like, cows, which are, like, testy and dangerous.
That can be.
I mean, yeah, that's accurate.
That can be very testy.
The big sign on the road to where I live, it says open range. And people are like, oh, that's so quaint. It's not quaint. It means you got to fence the cows out. They don't have to fence the cows in. And occasionally, maybe twice a year, you'll wake up and there'll be these range cattle. Last time there was a range cow, like, on the porch. And you, like, hear all this noise on the porch. I'm like, I wonder who's on the porch. You go like, my girlfriend says, who's on the porch? Said a cow. And she goes, like, four legs. I said, yeah, actually a cow. Moo, horns, the whole package. She goes, get it off the porch. I said, yes, dear. And I opened the door and said, shoo. And the cow goes, fine. But range cattle have mind of their own.
Oh, yeah.
And they I came out one morning, I was going to walk the dog, and the range cattle were standing in front of my steel targets. And I'm like, you guys need to look behind you. This is, like, wrong for you. You're going to turn into hamburger really quickly here.
Standing in front of a known distance can't be fatal.
But I kind of like that. I mean, it's kind of, I'm glad I kind of still live in a world where range cattle occasionally come down the trail. Because I'm pretty sure in New York City, when the time I lived in New York City, I never saw a single range cow. That's not Mm-mm. true.
I mean, I was going to say upstate.
Yeah, well.
I mean, New York City. No, we're talking about Manhattan.
I was thinking.
I mean, there are a few cows there, but.
In Manhattan?
Well, I'm not talking about cattle.
Oh,
I was thinking Greenwich Village. I may have seen some interesting cattle there, but. Oh, no, I told you. It's like. I think the reason my girlfriend asked is one day I was home alone and she'd never leave me unsupervised. And this knock on my door, and nobody knocks on my door. It's hard to get to my door. One time there was a traffic accident, and the sheriff's department thought it might be one of my cars because it's a Mini Cooper and stuff. And I got a call from the sheriff's department. They said, there's a plainclothes deputy at the base of your driveway. Look out the window. He's holding up his badge. Can he come forward? Like, you don't have to ask. And he goes, it's kind of a courtesy we take for those of you living in the back country.
Hold on. Why does he want to come see you? Maybe you don't want him to come forward.
Well, I know, but I said he could come up, and he came up, and he goes, that's the wrong color car. It's like, okay, that's cool. We're all good here. But there's a knock on the door, and I'm like, there's a knock on the door. And I go, I peek at the little door. I said, yes, and there's this, like, chubby woman standing on my porch, and she's holding up credentials. And she goes, hi, I'm from the government. I said, really? The government? And she goes, see my ID? I said, I do. And she goes, now, I have a survey, and you are obligated by law to respond to the questions on the survey.
Oh, no.
I said, really? And she goes, yes, it's the law. I said, when you were walking up my driveway, did you see a sign? And she goes, I did. And it said, no trespassing. I said, what else did it say? And she goes, no exceptions, this means you. I said, and it means you. And she goes, what does that mean? I said, if you're not off my property in 60 seconds, I'm going to shoot you. And her eyes got really big, and she turns bright red. She throws her papers, and she runs screaming down my driveway. And my girlfriend comes home, and she goes, I heard the oddest thing. I heard that you chased a federal survey taker off the property. I said, I didn't chase her. I just scared the crap out of her, and she ran off the property. And they're like, we're never going to get the federal funds we deserve. And I said, I'm pretty sure none of us deserve anything, but we're not answering questions.
So, going to derail you for a second.
Okay, I'm derailed.
Federal funds you deserve.
One of my neighbors who makes a lot of money said that. I said, what does that mean? I mean, the last survey I got that they told me I had to fill out, it said, how many bathrooms do you have? And I said, none. only external bathrooms. How many people live in your home? 76.
Oh, so you filled it out correct.
I did. And plus, I'm insistent that my nationality is I was born in Pomerania. Therefore, I'm a Pomeranian. And I'm very proud of being
that
a
seems
Pomeranian.
Legit.
And this nobody's ever said anything. You know, nobody's ever said, you know, that's a dog. No, they don't do that. I once had to carry my parrot, Ripley. We were going on vacation. I took him to Florida. I have a gray parrot who talks and is really smarter than anybody I ever worked for in television. And he makes animal noises. And we're in the airport, Denver International, and he's making cat noises. He's going like, row, row. And this woman comes up and goes, oh, my God, what kind of bird is that? And he looks at her and he goes, row. I said, he's a cat bird. And she goes, oh, I've heard of them.
Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no.
That's when my girlfriend said, you got to stop it. You really have to stop this. That was the period of time when I was telling people I was dead, when somebody would call and say, we need to speak to Mr. Bain. I'd say, I'm sorry. He's passed. And I didn't say I was dead. I just passed.
Well, you could have just said, excuse me, I've passed away.
I mean, I'm dead. You know that I'm dead. And people
that's,
be like,
that's bordering on brilliant, actually.
Yeah, just you just have to say it in your own voice. And be like, no, I'm. You guys are great, but no, I've passed away. Thank you.
Passed away.
If you look at people straight on, you'll look them straight in the eye, and you tell them a really blatant lie, they'll buy it. I was once I was once rollerblading in a parking garage, and the security guard came in. I was teaching people how to stop on skates, and if you start at the top of a parking garage, you'll learn how to stop before the bottom, or you'll actually die.
That's what we call a self-correcting problem.
It is. And the guy comes up and says, you can't skate in here. I said, I'm not skating. And he goes, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I disturbed you. And he left. It's like, that
worked. He had no idea what to even say after you said, I'm not.
Well, when I said, I'm not skating, he's like, I would have gone next with levitating, but he just went away.
Huh.
And I thought, that's a really interesting thing. Next time I'm going to tell people I'm a penguin, see if that works.
Now that, we all know, is a lie.
Well, I mean, that's, yeah. You have knees.
Well, he's got a brand new knee, actually.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I could tell him that I was a penguin until he replaced my knees.
He elected to have knees, so he can't be a penguin.
I changed. I transitioned. That's a great word. I told you about, I saw like furries at a field.
Furries.
Furries. You know, furries.
Can you define a furry?
It's a person with a really intense mental problem and an urge to cover themselves in fur and rub up against you. And if I've offended any furries out there, really, I'm sorry as hell.
He doesn't care. Don't listen to him.
That is the biggest laughing lie anybody's
seen. It's actually true. And I'm driving home, and I live rural, right? And I'm driving past these fields I've driven past a zillion times. And in the middle of this field, there are two furries having a tea party. And I drove past. I'm like, yeah. And this voice in my head goes, there were two furries having a tea party in that field. I stopped the car because I thought, I'm having a flashback to the 60s. I mean, all those drugs finally came home to roost. And I thought, I'll go back. Turned around, I go back. And the furries waved at me and said, come on, have some, you know, join the tea party. I said, I never did that many drugs.
You got silent invited to
a furry tea party. I went home and I told my sweetie, I said, there's two furries in a field having a tea party. And she goes, you're having a flashback to the 60s. So no, I've already cleared that out. You know, that was not it. There were furries. And she's like, just, I don't want to hear it. But every time we go past that field, we slow down and look. Furries, where are they?
We may have to pay money to get your girlfriend on the podcast with you.
She won't talk. She's a...
But
she's
if we get her started in all the stuff that you have said over the years that makes her go, I don't want to hear it, Michael.
Actually, you know, my friend Marshall, his wife Teresa, Marshall and Teresa are really well known on the internet because Teresa is hysterical on just an average day. You know, she's totally hysterically funny. And I was staying with Marshall and Teresa, And I told them the furries, and she goes, I've never heard of furry, because she lives in Howard, Kansas, and there are no furries in Howard, Kansas.
Is it the climate?
No, it's only like 8 people.
Oh, there's, got it.
You know, I mean, it would have to be a relative of yours that was dressing like a bunny.
So it's cultural.
It's cultural.
Got it.
Well, and she, I'm a little confused about you really quick, but I'm sorry for interrupting, but
penguins?
You, I know where you live, general area, because I grew up in Colorado, and like we said, it was nice. How the fuck were there 2 furries in your area, and how did they know about that said area?
That's what confuses me, because it was like a big field, and it wasn't any close by house. And you wondered if, you know, let's say you're a furry, right? You're in Denver, and you're hanging out wherever furries hang out. Probably not, you know, in Aurora, because the Venezuelans will eat them.
So Central Park?
Yes, I'm pretty sure there's a furry or two there. And say, let's drive up to rural Colorado and have a tea party and see if anybody shoots us. Because, I mean, honestly, if it's small game season and you're dressed like a fox, I mean, the mount would be just awesome.
That could be valid.
But, yeah. You know, Teresa goes, I've never heard of a furry. I don't know what they are. I said, take your phone. You're always connected to the internet. Search furry sex. And she types in furry sex and pushes the button and goes, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Jesus. She goes, how could you show me this? I said, I like to help people.
She had a question.
Yeah.
And Michael Bain had the answer.
I could show you things outside of the realm of Howard, Kansas.
That's a whole new dimension of I drink whiskey and no thanks.
I think we need to add, I need to start adding more of this to my podcast. Michael, you're going to be coming on mine soon to see what happens.
And there is a list that should be started of new t-shirts that need made.
Not a furry.
All right, give me a second. I'm just going to start typing this out.
Now you got a plan.
Well, that's where, I mean, and then the other people have told me, they said, like, you know, there's schools where in California, that's a shock, right, where they provide cat boxes for the people in the class that identify as a cat. And I'm like, I don't remember much about junior high school, but I'm pretty sure I never got to piss in the classroom.
No. And I'll be honest with you, there's a very strict litmus test for these children that think that they identify as a cat or a dog or whatever. Can you lick your butt?
Yeah, that's like great.
Well,
it's a quiz.
Well, because if you can't, you're not.
And if you can, you get to be on late night television.
Correct.
Oh, my God. I'm just thinking about that. What does it even the teacher do? Does the teacher identify as a cat? And then is it in decent exposure for parts?
They're putting litter boxes in the hallways at these schools.
In the hallways. I thought it was in the classrooms.
No, actually, I read one. How can you do that? You raise your hand.
Yeah.
Oh, that means you've got to go.
And see, I don't identify as a cat, so I wouldn't know the code. But there's got to be something.
They probably teach that in California. Row, it's number 2.
Yikes. No, this is becoming a real thing. Seriously, in schools, this is legitimate problem.
That's not good.
No, it's not good.
That's just like the greatest understatement ever. It's like, that's not good. No, it's like the apocalypse.
Well, I'm trying to be as polite as possible. At the same time, I want to find the individuals who are in charge of this.
There are grown adult parents that are supporting this.
That's why I said I want to find the people in charge of this.
There are school boards full of parents that are supporting this in their community.
Thank you. That's truly weird, isn't it?
We are off the rails, headed for hell as a culture. We're not going to make it. There's a reason when aliens fly by our planet, they lock the fucking
doors. That's right. They're like, pass that place by, man. There's some sketchy people down there pretending to be cats. Or foxes. I don't want to discriminate.
Well, I mean, wouldn't it be better if I just provided them alcohol until they just pass out, and then we could find out what they really are, do a genetics test?
We could go back to the 60s.
But they don't believe in science.
They don't have to. They're drunk.
But they don't believe in it.
Well, you know, maybe a little LSD.
I never said what I was putting in the whiskey.
Yeah. It's like, here's a lovely old-fashioned.
It is
old-fashioned. It's going to be a great old-fashioned for you when you come to in Cleveland in about 2.5 weeks.
Oh, man.
You're not going to be a cat anymore.
Speaking of slipping people things in their whiskey, Recently, at the peak of our last winter in Riverton, we have a group of Native Americans. We call them park rangers. They are the homeless drunk populace of our Native reservation, and they live in the city park. That's why they're called park rangers. Well, there is some guy in town that would roll up, offer them a warm place to get out of the weather in his van. And it sounds just as sketchy as it sounds, but he would drive them 2 hours to the town next door, to Casper, drop them off at the homeless shelter to where they could have a warm meal and a bed. But they had no idea where they were because they were hammered drunk when he picked them up. He was displacing our homeless population four or five at a time. I don't know why the city did not give this guy, like, the key to the city or a medal
right.
or some shit.
Isn't there a grant for that?
We should fund this. But, I mean, this happens.
I'm trying to think of something to say to that, but I was trying to think of law and criminal law and everything like that, and there's nothing.
I mean,
they voluntarily got in a vehicle.
Correct.
And he dropped you off at a place where you're getting provided care, comfort,
correct,
food,
he helped
medication,
and then
you forget where you're at.
It would be even better if that was Montreal.
Oh, that would be interesting.
It's cold you would
here.
Have to be really drunk.
The Canadians never get that drunk.
No, I was talking about the Native Americans.
There's white man drunk.
Yeah,
and then there's Indian drunk.
Is that
Indian drunk's a whole separate thing?
How?
10 times more.
How?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. It took a minute. Boom.
See, I'm slow.
We're all running a little slower than
I'm
you.
I'm slow.
It's these fine old fashions. Right?
Yeah, Johnny's doing a great
whiskey,
job with them.
You know? It's just weird. I mean, it's we were in Paris last year, and you take the river boat, boat down the Seine and send to the Eiffel Tower, and all along is like tents of the homeless. And then we saw like the opening to the Olympics, which
oh no,
and they were all gone. There were no tents along the river. I'm like, no, they just hired them all to do the opening ceremony of the Olympics. I mean, it's what it certainly seemed like. It was kind of like
it was horrible.
Well, it was horrible, and you kind of I was watching it at a restaurant. You know, I'm sitting there like, this may be affecting my appetite.
It would. It totally would. And you know, I danced around that athletic arena a couple times way back in the day, and it was an absolute shame what the Olympic Committee has put together and called it acceptable.
But they're French. I mean, they are French.
That still shouldn't matter.
It shouldn't.
It's an international community, and they represented it poorly.
Well, not only that, they displayed themselves in a way that insulted one of the largest religious groups in the world.
All of the religious groups in the world. They didn't pick on just one. They picked on everybody.
I know, but having the Olympic Committee actually doing that at the same time and allowing them to get away with it
I
don't know how countries didn't uproar and pull out.
It's just this whole level that in America. I mean, it's okay to insult me. You know why? Because I'm an old white guy. Worse, I'm an old white guy from the South. I mean, I couldn't be any lower on the totem pole if I was actually like a penguin.
But by that demographic, I mean, it's a sport insulting you.
Yeah.
I mean, they teach classes in it now.
It's like, it's like, what's the deal on that? How did that, how did it come to pass that we allowed it to happen? And I think about that a lot now, more than I used to. I mean, and COVID taught me that a little bit, is initially you do these things, and then one morning you wake up and you go like, I'm not going to do this anymore. My sweetie, I mean, really, I was so proud of her, was thrown out of a Hallmark card store for failure to wear a mask. She's the only person in history to be thrown out of a Hallmark card store. There's probably a Hallmark card for that. We're sorry you were thrown out of our store, bitch.
If there's not a card for that, we need to make one.
There should be.
Give me a minute.
That's a trophy right there.
But, I mean, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I thought when people would, like, I'd be walking down, like, hiking on a trail, and they'd be like, you get further away from me. I thought, every time we let that happen, we encourage it. And so I did a test run of that where a guy said, you know, I was standing in line at my favorite microbrewery, which didn't require a mask. And a guy came in and said, you're not wearing a mask. I said, you, stand up. Are you going to do anything about it? Are you prepared to act right now? Because I'm good. Let's go. Let's go. Come on. What do you think? And he slunk off to the bathroom, and people started applauding. And they're like, yeah, yeah. And I thought, you know, when you don't do things like that, when you don't allow yourself that, and it doesn't mean you have to punch him in the face. My sweetie went to a home improvement store without a mask, and she walks in. She's walking around without a mask, and there's big signs, must wear mask. And she didn't have a mask. And there's like four or five black guys that were buying like construction supplies. And one of them looked at her and said, oh, fuck this. She threw his mask off. And people are throwing their mask off. And it's like, if you don't obey, at some point, then they go like, whoa, what do I do now? He didn't obey. He didn't. Then she didn't do what she's supposed to do. And I think we bear the blame of for so long saying, I mean, we're basically libertarian. You know, again, we've talked about it. I mean, I don't care. You want to be a furry, you want to marry a sheep, I mean, you know, have a threesome with a sheep, a priest, and, you know, I don't know, an alien from another planet. As long as everybody's consenting, I'll send flowers. But I just don't want you to, you know, when you say you have to call me they,
no, I don't.
No, I don't. No,
I don't. I don't have to do that. And it's like, as I told you, someone said to me, well, you don't respect me. I said, no, actually, I don't. I mean, that's, are we good? I mean, I'm still.
You haven't earned it yet.
You know, respect is always earned. I don't really care what you call yourself.
That's right.
But I think one of the things that really I thought was injurious to me is when I lived in New York City, I was a magazine editor in New York City, and it's a tough, I mean, that's a tough league. New York City, if you want to be a magazine editor, you want to be a magazine writer, New York City is the big leagues. That's where the big boys play. And if you can play in that league, you know, you get to hang with them. But one of the guys that really helped me was because he was another Southerner from North Carolina. And he's a photographer, a brilliant photographer, well-known national photographer. But I was working with Country Music Magazine, and he took pictures for me, and we got to be good friends. And he opened doors for me at a really high level, because he was a player. He was up there, and he did it just because we were friends, you know. So a couple 3 years ago, he died unexpectedly. I've said before, he was gay. He was monogamous with the same guy for 38 years. And I've said to other people, if you're monogamous for 38 years, you call me, and I'll respect the hell out of you for that reason alone. But, you know, his boyfriend called me up and said he was dying. And he goes, I guess you're his friend. He goes, but I don't really much care about straight people. And I said, you know, that's not right. This guy's my friend. This guy was a guy that I really, truly, deeply cared about as a friend, and who I kept in touch with. You know, every Christmas I would end up talking to Leonard about all the people we worked
but
with.
But why
in New
does
York
that
got
to become an issue at all?
And it was never an issue. And I said that this is not an issue that ever existed. Why should it exist at this moment? And you know, he goes, he can't talk. What should I tell him? I said, tell him he's my friend, and I loved him. I love him because I love my friends. And he goes, fine, and hung up. And it's like, that's because of the culture that divides us. We pay for that. You know, we pay for that.
But we allow it to be okay because we go along to get along.
Well, I don't think it's that, to be honest, right? Because if you look back in the day and everything that was happening, you can pull up people from the past that had homosexuality that everybody was friends with. I think it's a divided culture that started in the last century. And you can see that. If you look at, let's say, 85 to 95, there was zero problems, zero issues. Yeah, there were some, right? And it's gotten progressively worse over a 10-year process. And then as soon as it hit almost 06, 07, you saw a spike when that happened. And then the change happened every 3 years.
But when exactly did who you sleep with and how you chose matter to anybody else?
It shouldn't have mattered at all.
At what point does it make you special? Because that's what they're trying to do.
I mean, if you look at it, it started with Christianity, right? Because the Romans before that were homosexuals for the most part and had bisexual relations. Yeah,
rock and roll.
But nobody cared who you slept with.
No, no one did.
Nobody still does.
No.
But when you make an issue out of it and you say, hey, look at me, I'm special because I do it this way, you're an asshole.
Yeah.
It's not about gay. It's about being an asshole.
It's about being an asshole. And it doesn't matter which particular victimized group you say you are. It's like it's my joke about reparations. You know, I'm pure Scots Bane. You know, I know where my clan stood on the battlefield at Culloden Moor, and I know where they died.
Yeah, the opposite of mine.
You bastard. But
you're welcome.
It you know, in going to Scotland and going through the big books, I found, like I said, the receipts for my family where it said, you know, 60 Banes, last 60 Banes rounded up, transported Carolinas. And I'm like, wait, I'm the children of slaves. I mean, I'm the children of people bought over as indentures, and I would really like those reparations. If you're getting reparations for something you didn't do, I mean, half the people coming to this country came, the Irish, a good example, and the Italians before them.
Six or seven generations now?
Yeah.
Not a single person owned a slave.
No.
No, I mean, it's all fake.
Now, there's indentured servitude.
Yeah, which, I was going to say, but we're not going to get into that.
If you
that,
ask
yeah.
my employees, that's, they're going to tell you that they're that.
That's what happens when you're flipping fries at McDonald's. But they deserve reparations.
Well, shit, they're getting it. It's $17 an hour now.
Maybe I'm going to go work at McDonald's. I'll put on my furry costume.
Yeah, hold on a second. You might be onto something because, no joke, the minimum wage jobs we all used to do was in high school because, you know, we needed to do something by not getting in trouble, right?
Right.
Make a little money.
A little money. It's a starting wage. No. That's now pushing into $20 an hour, which is a hell of a wage.
Well, I think I could be a longshoreman, you know. I could stand around, watch a robot do my job, collect $80,000 a year.
Exactly.
Plus overtime.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly right. And you'd have a union behind you saying you've earned it.
That's really harsh. I mean, I know a lot of union workers. A lot of my friends, when I lived in New York City, were construction workers. And, you know, but I had this horrible first exposure to unions. Is I was working in a factory, making a little money, you know, like, factory work is such fun. You just kind of want to spend your whole life at it. You know, good repetitive activity. And the company was going to go out on strike. And I knew these guys, and I worked the night shift. And so in the morning, we'd go drink because, you know, night shift is ugly and, you know, midnight to 8.
Sketchy shit happens
night shift. But, I mean, they're getting ready to go on strike. And I'm like, oh, cool. You know, I'm young, da-da-da. Smash the man, da 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 da. And the shop steward comes over and he goes, if you come into work, we're going to beat you senseless and we might kill you. And I'm like, dude, that's really silly. Yesterday we were having a beer, you know, in the morning with a few people, like morning drinkers. And he goes, we mean business. And I'm like, I went home and thought about it. And so I went to work when they went on strike. I went to work with a 357 Blackhawk tucked in my jeans. And I was riding in on a flatbed truck where they bought in scabs, like regular workers who didn't go out and strike. And the guys are like, you're dead. And I just raised up my shirt. And I'm like, who's dead here? Who's dead here? You know, I'm cool. If you think you can beat me up, do it. You know, but don't ever. And I told the guy afterwards, he goes, well, I didn't mean it. I said, don't say it. I mean, you came over and you threatened me, and all I'd ever been was gracious to you because I knew I was the low boy on the totem pole. You know, it's factory work is, I understand seniority. Once I worked at the Hunter Fan Factory, And I was on the box fan assembly line, the box fan conveyor, and I was the last guy on the conveyor. And the guy in front of me put the grates in box fans. And he had a brass mallet that had been there since like 1939. And he'd take the grate and he'd set it in the box and he'd go, wham, 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 wham. And it knocked off 8 chips of paint from the grate. And my job was to touch up the paint and then take the fan off the assembly line. And, you know, thousands of fans. It just ran, and I did that. And every night the guy would look at me and he goes, you're so damn dumb, you could be replaced with a rubber mallet. And I'm like, if I don't get out of this factory, I'm going to hang myself.
Oh,
I'm
goodness.
Pretty sure.
Hours and hours and hours of just that.
Just that. Chunk, and the next fan's there. It's like an incredible, you know, it taught me that you need to really find something to do for work that doesn't involve fans.
But imagine, if you will, that you were doing that job and you found it challenging and career worthy, and that is your life.
Yeah.
There are folks out there that's the way they live.
I worked in a factory where my job was stapling the clip spines in notebooks. And also I had a riveter, and the riveter was made in the 1920s. Big flywheel, you know, something that no sane person would operate. And they put on a jerry-rig kind of safety system, so you had 2 buttons. And we all knew, we all came in with a screwdriver, because you could either run time or piecework, right? Time was awful, but piecework, you know, if you could run notebooks fast enough, you could make, you know, you might be able to make $18 a night.
Oh, geez.
You could live large, you know. And so we all came in with screwdrivers. The first week there, somebody said, let me show you how to take the safeties off the machine. I'm like, yeah. So I took the safeties off. And the problem was everybody there was either drunk or stoned because, you know, you're standing in front of a machine going. But anyway, so I was like, possibly it would degrade performance specifications. And I took the safety off the machine, and I'm feeding spines and notebooks. So I'm going, dump, 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 dump. And I accidentally went, dump, dump, dump. And my finger, I punched a rivet through my finger. And I'm like, wow, that's cool. And I put my finger in my mouth. I went to the foreman. And I said, whoa, 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 whoa. And he goes, take your finger out of your mouth, you goddamn idiot. I took my finger out of my mouth, and blood spurted into his face. He goes, put your finger back in your mouth, you goddamn idiot. Whoa, whoa, whoa. I got to go to the hospital. They took the rivet out, bandaged me up. Best part, I got 2 weeks of workman's comp. I thought, you know, I got 10 fingers. I got 9 left. That's 18 weeks of workman's comp if I carefully space out every time I rivet my finger. You know, but they moved me to a different machine. It was moved to a machine where I put envelopes in a package and sent them into a plastic sealer. So every night I would sit there and write messages and put the messages in the envelopes and send them to the sealer. It's like, help, I am trapped here. Please, please send money. Or like, Dad, I told you I've been kidnapped.
Oh,
I just kept sending messages out into the world.
So I want to unpack that really quick in so many different levels. But first and foremost, how many factories have you worked in? Because you've named 5 so far.
I've worked in because it was easy work. You know, I was.
And how long were each one of these stints?
It was like I'd come home from college and I'd work in a factory for a month or so and then wander away. And then somebody else would say, hey, you know, so and so's hiring. I'd say, oh, yeah, I can work 30 days. Because they knew you weren't going to stay, they knew you were just transient help. But, you know, I worked paper factories and machine factories, machine works. I worked in a factory that reconditioned brick, old antique brick for houses, and my job was chipping the the leftover mortar off the bricks, which is something I really like, well suited intellectually to. A small hammer, tuk, 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 tuk. You know, you get to spend a lot of time in your own head.
There it is. Well, there it is.
Well, that's what I wanted to figure out.
He has spent a lot of time in
I got this job like one summer. This guy goes, there's a carny that's in town for a while, like for the summer. And they said they're offering positions, you know, ticket takers. I said, wow, ticket takers at a carny. So that's cool. So I went and I took tickets for a while, and they finally decided I had a lot of potential because I was able to tear the tickets in half. I was slick. Tunk, drop them in the box. And they said, would you like to run the Ferris wheel? I said, oh, yeah. What a tactical error on their part.
Oh, no.
The Ferris wheel, it was one of those things where you pay the blank sum and you go around as much as you want. And they were like young women, like 12, 13, 14, who are really the most vile-mouthed creatures on earth. And I'm running the Ferris wheel. You like push the blank forward and it goes around and around and around. And they would yell at me as they came by, various and sundry slurs. And I was a student of physics. I understood momentum. So I just let the Ferris wheel run. The more the Ferris wheel ran, the faster the Ferris wheel went until it's like whipping. And they're going like, please, Mr. Nice Man, let us off. I'm like, shh. And they came over after a couple of days and said, we're putting you on the cable ride. I said, okay, cable ride is good. And the cable ride turns out it's like a cable ride. You got all these people, right? And the cable thing, and a whole high school football team came and said, can we all get in the cable car? I said, I don't know, but I'm certainly game to try. And so, unfortunately, the cable car hit a tree. They were hanging in the tree. It got stuck in the tree. And they're over, and they're like, what have you done? I said, there's an entire high school football team stuck in a tree. And they're like, we're going to put you on machine maintenance. And they gave me a toolbox. And I've never ridden a ride since.
Yeah, no.
Somebody like me with a wrench going like, I can take this off.
Loosen this nut here. We'll see what happens.
I'm just curious if he did that before the cable ride. So that's how it got stuck in the tree.
So interesting thought is, who set up the cable ride?
And why was it so
why
close?
Was it in the
wait, maintenance set up the cable ride. So guys like me set up the cable ride for guys like me to run it into. It was like the branches of a tree. I thought, you know, for a high school football team, they're really pretty much wusses.
And so this is where the Mensa members got their start.
That's what I was thinking. That's where all these ideas for these TV shows came across.
Yeah. So
well, you know, you should have a checkered career. I mean, you should always have, like, a checkered career. When I was in college, I got a job working, and I was like, I worked in a print shop in the middle of the night. And one day this woman came in, and she goes, you know, you're the only person here, and you got a print shop, and you got everything. And she goes, I need a certificate of virginity.
I'm listening.
And I said, yeah. What's the certificate of virginity? She said you need to print something up that looks really good that says certificate of virginity, and then you need to sign it. I said, I'm the printer. She goes, they don't care. So I made my first certificate of virginity, and I signed it and gave it to her, and she goes, thanks. It gave me $20. And somebody else came in and said, I need a certificate of X. And I'm like, sure, because it's all like nitwit stuff. You know, and it's like I have a whole printing press here. I mean, a whole printing machine. I can do anything. But, I mean, you kind of learn to do that stuff, and then it all kind of trickles into, you know, I work for a little tiny weekly newspaper where we perpetuated a hoax on a monster in a lake. And really, the subscriptions went through the ceiling.
So you're the one who made Loch Ness.
I went to Loch Ness looking, you know, when I was in Scotland. I'm like, I went to that place where there's the guy there that has a trailer that's constantly monitoring Loch Ness, and I didn't see Loch Ness or the guy because the trailer was locked up, but I got really excellent fish and chips at the restaurant next door. Maybe it was Loch Ness. You know, Nellie, she fried up well.
Well, and the TV shows that talk about this, they lead you right up to the idea that they're about to discover.
And they never do.
And they never do.
No.
Or they allude to the fact that, you know, it was a weather balloon shadow or some shit. But they never actually tell you.
Ghost hunter shows where they're always going like, I feel paranormal activity. That could have been, you know, the cat you ate, you know, in Springfield, Ohio.
Michael Bean's beans for 100 people.
You know, oh, no.
His signature beans.
They'll know some paranormal activity when we're done.
Well, I'm not sure if they're going to know or the property's going to know at that point.
Oh, the property's going to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, the hole in the ozone layer is going to be obvious.
So is this going to turn into, like, what is that, Blazing Saddles? When they're all sitting around the fire.
Look,
those were the good old
if
days
he's willing to loosen
like
a bolt
that
on a Ferris wheel because he's now maintenance, give the man the power to cook beans for 100 people, this could only lead to tears.
The funny thing was when I was the maintenance guy, I was the most responsible because all the other guys were plastered all the time. They were like classic carnies with like face tats and earrings and be like, here, go fix that because it's not working. Like, I don't know how. And they'd be like, just do something. And I'd be like, okay. Hopefully I keep this from flying off into the ozone. But then they'd be like, you want a drink? So no, I probably not. I'd have to fix the cable ride.
The union hates the sober maintenance guy. And you never just tell Michael to go do something.
Well,
I will.
I mean,
we know you will. That's the whole point.
I have no career path comparative to you. I mean, you've gone through 17 so far that I've heard, and I went from military to law enforcement to whiskey, now to running a podcast and still a whiskey company.
You need to diversify and have a checkered past.
I mean, I have a checkered past. I'm just not going to fucking say it on the internet anymore.
So the internet has a long memory.
I think Michael could probably get you a job at a carnival as the maintenance guy.
You'd have to get some facial tattoos.
You got a Sharpie.
Yeah, how do they know? Can you drink? Do you own a wrench? You're on.
I guess we'll find out.
She's like, we're checking the time here to see if we've run over. But no one here can tell time.
Well, it's not exactly the time. It's this weird little box that we talk into that puts all this on a little SD card. And it says we've been on here for an hour.
Really?
Yeah, because we have.
Probably exactly an hour.
Yep.
Did I tell you, I went with my friends in the Ranger Battalion to the Grenada invasion because I was like in Florida and they called me up and I'd been at Fort Benning, I worked, like mentioned, as an aggressor. And I get a call, and the guy's like, you know who I am? I said, yeah, sure. He goes, you busy this weekend? I'm like, no. He goes, you want to go invade a small island in the Caribbean? I said, yeah, sure. I mean, I'm good for it. And he says, okay, fly to Barbados and call a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy. And so I got on a plane, you know, military plane over with the guy, the main military guy in the back going, why are you here? Next question, how are you here? And I'm like, well, you know, I don't know. But nonetheless, I'm here. And me and an Army Times photographer, and we flew to Grenada, and we landed, and there's like sporadic sniper fire, and it's raining, all this shit. And finally, the guy on the plane goes, how do you plan to get around? He used a lot of like large swear words. And he goes, how are you going to get around? I said, I'll get a taxi. And he goes, it's a war, you idiot, which I hear you idiot a lot. I mean, appended to the things I do. And I said, I'll work it out. And we get out of the plane, we run and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's pouring rain. And the Army Times photographer says, do you have any idea what to do? I said, watch and learn, little grasshopper. And we hiked until we found a town. And I went up and down the streets of the town until I found an old car with taxi painted on the side. And I went to the door and knocked on the door. And finally, the guy comes to the door. And I said, I need a taxi. And he looks at me and he goes, there's a war. I said, how much money did you make last year in American dollars? And he comes back and he goes, $300. So this is $1,000 American. And the Army Times guy goes, and here's another $1,000 American. I said, I need a taxi. And he goes, promise me you won't get me killed. I said, I promise you, I won't get you killed. So I finally meet up with my guys, the Rangers, and they're like, holy crap, you have a taxi?
So you showed up to the war.
In a taxi.
In a taxi.
Yeah. And it worked out fine. I got Christmas cards from that guy for like 5 years. He sent his kids to college based on the money that me and the Army Times guy gave him, you know. But I went up. I had some friends who are EOD, and they were like, hey, you got to come up with us, man. We got to take the debts out of a whole bunch of, like, RPGs and other stuff. And they said, we know you love to watch people take debts out of shit, which I'd never watch anybody take a debt out of anything. But I'm like, yeah, sure. So on top of this hill, and these guys are in there, the Klieg lights and everything, and everything's like, taking detonators out of something. And I'm sitting on a box, like 4x4 by 4 foot skid with boxes on it. And I'm just kind of watching the guys, and it was kind of interesting. And a Jeep pulls up, and a guy comes in, and everybody jumps to attention, even the guy taking the debts out. He stands up and salutes, and the guy salutes, and he looks around, and he goes, who is that? Doesn't look at me, just points. And the guy goes, it's okay, that's just Michael. And he goes, who the F is just Michael? And they're like, oh, well, he's in. He's like, what is he doing here? And I said, I'm kind of watching. And he goes like, he was very angry at this point. I thought, I'm probably going to be arrested. But then he goes, what are you sitting on? I said, boxes? And he whips out his knife, cuts the box away. I'm sitting on a 4 foot cube of Semtex, boxed in small boxes like this. And all the EOD guys go, oh, crap. It's like a 4 foot cube of Semtex. And everybody's like, and the guy goes, get off the explosives. And I'm like, I'm good. And he goes, would you please get this person as far away from me as you can do on this island? And I'm like, cool. I can do that. But it was interesting.
So my before you go on, there's like two or three things I want to know. Has there been any written documentation of this that you've done of just this particular story?
No, because it was a little sketchy.
Okay, cool. The second one is, can we do something that's written on this particular story?
I probably can, yeah.
And then, can we turn this into a movie?
Yes, we can. I'm going to add a little bit of detail to maybe the story. And it may not be a related incident or just a coincidence. I was sitting in the couches out here with Colonel Brown and his cronies several years ago. And if you don't know who Colonel Brown is, he is the editor-in-chief of Soldier of Fortune. He's that guy. And he tells me a story of Michael Bain, who shows up out of the blue in a Hawaiian shirt to a war zone and is in the bathroom trying to figure out how to get rid of his war trophies, because they told him as they were approaching the tarmac, these things are strictly prohibited. You will not leave the country with them. And so I don't know if that's this trip.
That was this trip.
That was this trip. Okay, so I know I have a witness to this that's now credible because he was there in a different capacity.
Colonel Bob was totally cracked up because when we were getting ready to get on the plane to leave the island, they're yelling at us like, if you have any stuff in those bags that could be considered war materials, you're going to spend the rest of your life in a military prison. And he goes, do you have anything to say, Colonel Brown? And Bob goes, I have to go to the bathroom. And then I was right behind him and I raised my hand and the guy goes, what? Said, I have to go to the bathroom too. Men always go together. And the guy's like, just get out if you do. And Bob and I are dumping stuff out of these bags. Right, got bayonets. I disassembled a Czech Scorpion because I figured I was the only person on Grenada that knew how to disassemble a Czech Scorpion. And I figured I could take the pieces back, not the receiver, but you never know. And Bob goes, is that a Czech Scorpion? I said, yeah. And he goes, that's so cool. And he goes, who are you? I said, just Michael. You know, it pretty much covers everything, you know, but...
That is exactly how I got told the story, so I have a witness.
Oh, no, we're done with this. This is not going any farther. I'm going to come to your place, or you're coming up to Vail
to the distillery. We're going to shut it down for like a week. I'm going to get this whole story.
It was just.
Colonel Brown will be here on the 12th.
Colonel Brown is so cool.
I will not. I'm probably going to be in surgery at that time.
But
they're going to reassemble you. Your shoulder or your bicep?
The whole shoulder. It's probably going to get replaced.
Go the whole package. Yeah. As long as you're going under.
Go from surgery number 7 to surgery number 8 on this one. So
I'll give you one last story. I'm at Benning, and I'm aggressor for the Ranger Group, you know, and the assignment we were given was that there's a 4-story building at Benning, right? And I'm my team, they said hold this building for as long as you can. And he goes, and he told everybody, got everybody together, a certain acronym agency SWAT team was there, a couple other big high-zoot SWAT teams. And they said, hold the building as long as you can. Rules of engagement are that they have no night vision. Of course, what they said in the first day of the event, they said in terrorism there is no rules of engagement. So, of course, we got night vision. We opened a door, let's say. And got nods for everybody. And we're on, you know, we've been fighting all night. We're on the roof of the building. And for some reason known only to, like, high-speed SWAT guys, they decided they wanted to do an ascent using ascenders on ropes. And so we're up there with the nods, and we're standing there, and we're looking down. And my friend, a friend named Jimmy Quinneman, who's EOD in Vietnam, and different. But Jimmy goes, you know, it's got to be done, man. I said, you're right, man. It's got to be done. So we got everybody lined up on the edge of the building, and we peed on the ascending SWAT members. And I honestly have never seen madder SWAT cops. One guy actually said to me, he goes, you ruined my uniform, you fucking little shit. And I'm like, it's just urine. You know, they slapped the handcuffs on, and, you know, they zip-tied our ankles. Yeah, they were like, it was worth it. I mean, if they
it was worth it.
The beat the crap out of us. It was worth it.
Michael,
you know?
I don't know where you've been my entire life, besides producing a bunch of TV shows, probably for my entire life, that I've probably watched, and I've known I've watched and seen you on multiple times. But where the fuck have these stories been that people are probably just going to be hearing about now?
So, just quick question: you mentioned movie.
And yes.
I'm completely on board.
Yeah.
Who's going to play this guy?
Dolly Parton once volunteered to play my wife if they ever did a movie on my life. I was in Nashville, and Dolly had asked for me and to be interviewed by, and I had a lovely lunch with Dolly, who I'd known for a long time. And at the end of the dinner, we're talking, and Dolly leans over, and she squeezes her arms together. She leans across the table. And I said, you know, Dolly, in an act of will, I've gone through this entire lunch without looking at your boobs. And she goes, she squeezes and she goes, Michael, honey, you are so old. She goes, but I do promise you, if they ever do a movie on your life, I'll be your girlfriend. I said, I would be honored.
Hell yeah.
I can tell you a Kris Kristofferson story. So me and Kristofferson, I met him when I first went on tour with Willie. Doing the state fair circuit across the South. And years later, a magazine goes like, we know you don't do celebrity journalism anymore. Would you go to Nashville and interview Willie? He's at the Opry. And so I go down, I get on the bus with Willie, and Chris is there. And Chris goes like, hi, Michael. I said, yeah, gosh, good to see you, Chris. It's been years. How are you? And he's telling me about his workout program, telling me about my workout program. And we're talking, and we're all, like, really virtuous. Chris and I are like, yeah, we've been through the fire, dude. And Willie comes in with a joint the size of, you know, a small train car. He's puffing away on it. And Willie says, smoke this joint with me. And Chris goes, I don't do that anymore. And I said, I don't do that anymore either, Willie. And Willie goes, for God's sake, it will not kill you to smoke this joint with an old friend. And Chris and I are like, yeah, that's cool. So we smoke the joint. And then hours later, we're both asleep on the table in the bus. Our heads are down. And I hear Chris goes, he goes, Michael? I said, Chris? He goes, Michael, what happened to us? I said, Willie happened to us. It's what always happens. Willie happened to us. And Willie comes in. He looks down and he goes, you guys are such pussies.
I can totally hear him saying
it,
too.
Oh, my God. That's great. Oh. I think I know who's going to play you, but I'm not going to say it here.
Okay.
On this recording.
As long as it's not George Clooney or a penguin, I could go, you know,
fuck
anybody. But
I got to change my answer.
Redirect.
Well, I mean, that would be like the worst thing of my life. It's like here in my doddering elderly years, they're like, we're doing a movie in your life, and George Clooney's playing you. I said, excuse me while I go in the restroom and hang myself with a tie. You know?
Got to end the movie some way.
That would do it.
I have someone, and I have someone in mind. But again, I'm not going to say it on here because I think I have an entire script written in my head now.
Wait, I know who could play me perfectly. Tyrus on the Greg Gutfeld show.
What the fuck?
He would be a great me.
Yeah, that'd be perfect. 6'5", Samoan.
300-pound pound, the living crab.
Oh, the resemblance is uncanny.
Yeah,
100%.
If you stand us next to each other, you know, it's going to be like...
like a mirror image.
What's that movie? Remember that, like, it was the South Park movie, one of the first by written by the guys at South Park? It was the LDS guy who went to L.A. and became a porn star, but he wouldn't have sex. And so they had what they referred to in the movie as a stunt cock. And so he would get, everything would get all hot, and then they would go, the director would go, cut, stunt cock. And it would always be somebody of a different nationality and color.
Oh, God.
And the LDS guy would go, does anybody see anything odd here? And they'd go, no. No. You never saw that movie?
I didn't, but they're watching porn, so at the end of the day, nobody cares.
It's a great movie.
I was in the Marine Corps. I watched it. Of course I did.
You didn't care.
No, none of us cared.
In the end, a guy saved the day with a giant cock rocket that shot out of his pants and killed everyone.
Well, that was the funniest face I've ever seen someone walk by with.
Well, the opportune time when she walked by and she throws his hands in the air and says, cock rocket.
Cock rocket.
You never know with a cock rocket in your hand.
She's going to have nightmares now.
Oh, my God.
So what just happened is one of the other folks attending Summit here happened to have to walk by us in that moment while we were talking. And she couldn't walk faster.
Well, I mean, not only in that, it was in a pink T-shirt. It said, I think, bye, bye, bye. No, what was it? It was a pink T-shirt, had Trump on it. It was great. It's a 2024 support Trump shirt, but it was an old 70s saying from a musical, I believe.
Did you see Trump is selling gold sneakers again?
That doesn't surprise me.
I want to buy some gold sneakers.
Oh, here's the shirt.
Okay.
Missed me.
Now you gotta kiss me.
Oh,
MAGA 2024 Trump.
So, just for the record, when you walked by it a second ago, what was the thing you heard?
Into the microphone. I didn't hear anything. I was trying to be quiet.
That's what I would say instantly. I heard nothing. Really?
You didn't hear what he was saying?
No, I didn't.
I'm glad.
So that look you gave us and you walked by at a fast pace isn't okay.
And I'm deaf, and I heard that.
I'm kind of impressed by your humility at the moment, because.
Yeah, I mean that's great because I just yelled it a second ago.
Right. We should probably replay it.
Then you can walk by again and go like, I didn't hear anything. No.
Squirrel.
I did not have the papers. I do not know anything about the Russians.
She has nothing on the Clintons.
That's lucky.
Right.
Otherwise, you're she like suicide you know, growing herself. Daisies.
I mean, we could talk about that later. I know some squirrels who fly with squirrels.
You know, when I met Trump, I was at the NRA show, and Trump comes. I was with Don Jr., and Trump came up right before the election, and he's like a sailing ship. This huge guy comes up to me, and he gets like this far from me. And he starts tapping me on the chest. He goes, dum, 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 dum. He goes, I know you. You're on television. You're good. Keep doing it. Bye. And he left. And Don Jr. goes, "That's my dad." I said, "I'm cool with it. I mean, it's the only potential president who's ever, like, tapped me on the chest."
Invaded your personal space and
yeah,
gave you a compliment. Yeah.
Years and years ago, I mean, I had lunch with Jimmy Carter when he was running. That's how old I am. You know, I was born in 1908. But I had lunch with Jimmy Carter because he said, "You'll love him. He's just a great guy." And I thought, "You sanctimonious preacher asshole." You know, we're sitting here like having like some sort of salad because it's good for Mother Gaia. What's wrong with you? And of course, he became president. I didn't. I was sure he was going to pick me for Secretary of State.
Fucking
well,
Carter.
I mean, there would have been the Secretary of something you would have been doing.
Yeah. I'd be like, "Launch! Launch!" You're like, "What?" I said, "I don't know, boats."
Oh, man. I mean, you would have been commanding my grandfather to press a button. So.
Boy.
Yeah.
That old, you know?
No, my grandfather was the person who invented the Titan missile or Titan
really?
Rocket. Yeah.
That's so cool.
No, it's terrifying.
No, it is, but I mean, you know, some people do real stuff, and I just wander aimlessly through the fields. What's that line from Peter Mathiasen? "At play in the fields of the Lord." I'm just
that is exactly
wandering
the
around.
Line.
That yeah, you got it dead on. Yeah, but no, you're not wrong. I'm. What am I? I went from shooting at people into another country to shooting at people in this country to getting people drunk and having them shoot at each other now. So,
well, I think the thing is that you did real stuff. He did real stuff. He's a manufacturer, a designer.
So did you. Just based off of the story you just told and provided to everybody listening to this, you gave a story that no one's ever heard before, that no one's going to hear again until this fucking movie's produced now.
There's, you know, there's a science fiction series called The Wheel of Time.
Yes.
And they made it into a series and stuff. But bizarrely, I've read all 25 books three times. And there's a concept within The Wheel of Time, and it's called Tavarine. And it's people who, like, things happen around, and they don't cause them to happen. Things just happen around them for whatever reason. The warp and the weft of the
universe. It's a cause and effect gravitational pull.
But it has no, like, it doesn't work in your benefit or against you or anything. It's just things oddly happen around you. And I read the story of Frederick Russell Burnham, who's an African scout and an Indian scout. And he was Jeff Cooper's inspiration for the scout rifle. An incredible story if you read it. And it's like things happened around him. It's like, oh, yeah, you know. So I ran into Teddy Roosevelt, and he wanted me to be a Rough Rider, but I had to go to South Africa and scout for the Boer. But on the way back after I was injured, I ran into Winston Churchill, and it was all kind of – it all seemed perfectly normal to him. That, well, doesn't everybody? And the answer is like, no, it's just kind of weird. You know, stuff just weird. I just kept waiting to be rich, and apparently I missed that boat. My sweetie said, how could you have been a huge success in the only part of television that doesn't make you a multimillionaire? And I'm like, I had to work. I mean, it was really hard, but I managed to do it. You know?
You found a passion, and it horribly is underpaid.
I remember
at
one
really
point
is,
they said,
yeah.
What would you think about doing canoeing shows? And I said, I'd rather shoot myself. And they're like, that's a no. I was like, yeah. I mean, what's the canoeing here? We're heading toward the headwaters of the mighty Missouri.
Well, you know, if you would have gotten Mike Rowe to do that, he would have killed it.
He would have killed it.
Yeah.
And I would be like, oh, man, do you have a motor?
Canoeing shows.
Like a 70
The waters around us are swimming slowly, but the paddle is pushing hard.
There is a certain zen that comes with rowing first on the right, then on the left.
And Mike Rowe. I mean, you couldn't have got this any better.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Mike Rowe. I watch his stuff and I'm thinking, like, that's so cool. You know, that.
What he did with Dirty Jobs and portrayed it and produced it and did everything himself
and
was...
I've met him a couple times. He's just that guy.
He's just...
He's not playing a character. He's not acting. He's just that guy.
And, well, not yet, but I'm trying to get him on the podcast because...
He'll come on.
He just started a whiskey company, too.
Did he?
He did. Cool. So, it's called Noble Spirits. He has a bourbon and a rye. I've tried them both. They're absolutely phenomenal. I reviewed them. I'm not going to push them out until he sends his producer sends me a message back. But it's a very good whiskey done on the very right terms, helping Micro Works move up in the right direction. So
that's really good. That's great. Yeah. Well, what you're doing is really cool too. I mean, it's great spirits. You know, it honors great men. It's great old fashioned. You know, it's just every expansion that you've taken is like, first thing, like, that's really weird, bitters. And I thought, no, you control everything. Control everything you can control.
Exactly. We try to move it in the right direction in the best way possible. So from bitters to maple syrup to brandy to honey to coffee even. So we make our own coffee now too. To pecans. We have barrel-aged pecans we do.
And you said it correctly. You didn't say like pecan, like a urinal in a whorehouse.
Well, I'm not saying pecans.
Pecan. People from Georgia.
You'd have to take the tires off a roof of his trailer house first.
Yeah, well, shit.
Yeah, you know, when you grow up in Memphis, what they tell you is that if you die and you're bad, you go to Arkansas. But if you're bad, you go to Alabama. You know?
Oh, my God. My grandfather's going to kill me if he was still alive.
Get off me, Dad. You're crushing my smokes.
No, but the story behind you and the motivation that you've had over the last 30, 40 years minimum, at least, pushing people to the right direction is kind of our motivation. You went with people to different countries because you said, why not?
Yeah.
You endured stuff, well, in the 60s and 70s, you just took stuff. I'm not saying you endured stuff, but...
I took stuff, though.
Michael never found a boundary that he thought was meant for him.
No.
Well,
and
they
that's.
Still don't.
Are they now, though?
I think so. You know, when you hit, like, your 70s, it's like when you can say, well, 60 is the new 40. 70 is the new freaking 70. And when you get past that, every year is like another nail driven cleanly in your coffin.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God. Don't tell that to my dad, because he just turned 73, and he's going to kill me if he ever hears this.
Dude, I'm 74. Oh. You know, I graduated from high school when the last mammoth was killed just outside of Milwaukee, you know.
Milwaukee. I would have never picked that as a location for the last mammoth.
I wasn't going to go there either, but I'm thinking.
I wasn't there either. So
I think he was in a circus. What are you going to do? They toured.
I'm pretty sure he's the one who killed the last grizzly bear in Colorado.
I bored it to death.
Again, they're in a circus. They go on tour.
I never said what he was doing with it.
Yeah. Well, you know. Was it?
Good Lord.
She never got used to me. What's that line? This is Jeremiah Johnson, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She lived with a wildcat for a while. She just never got used to me.
Yeah, lived in a cave with a mountain lion. And
she never got used to him. Now this has turned into a different direction. But I still want to hear the rest of this story about everything that you've done and record that so I can then write a book and make money off of your story.
Well, that's what I've done with my entire life, so... I've made money off other people. It's only fair, you know? It's
So I have one question for you. What is the best drink you've had so far over this past weekend, besides the old fashioned, or is there a drink in particular that you like to have at home or while on the road working?
I came late to Scotch. But I think, you know, single malt ultimately is in your DNA if you come from you know, that area of the world. When I was in Scotland, I went to Talisker and you know, out on the Isle of Skye and bent a knee. And I tend to fall back on, and I like your single malt. I mean, but I'm a peated single malt guy.
Okay.
So for me, you know, a Talisker or like a
Loch Lomond,
you know, those are good.
Yeah.
You know, when we first went, my girlfriend, we drove, you get to Talisker by driving down a sheep path that's a road. And she gets there and she goes, "My God, it smells like they're burning off fields." I'm like, yes, that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, doing and a Loch Lomond or a Talisker or even a Lafroig at that point.
And even a Lafroig, yeah. You know. I met a lot of in the early days when I was doing Sims and just kind of learning how this stuff worked. I met a bunch of SAS guys, you know, and they were like, you go to the bar and there's only one whiskey. Yeah, that's it. It's like, drink, strong. And you're like, oh, yeah, sure. But I did get to where I really loved scotch. And I, oddly enough, for somebody in Tennessee, I never really got the bourbon gene. It's because when you're a kid and you get a toothache in Tennessee, they say, here's a shot of Jack. Hold it as long as you can and spit it out. And you're like, but I like coming back to the scotch. You know, I think your single malt, I liked it because it had a kind of a sweet overview to it.
Right.
And I like that taste. I like that flavor. I believe partly from four trips to Africa, I believe deeply in gin and tonic. Maybe it might be England's greatest contribution to the world. A sundowner in Africa at sundown with a gin and tonic, and you're thinking, like, it's okay. I'm going to make it.
I mean, other than that, I mean, the gin and tonics aren't bad, but it's lavender.
Yeah?
And
yeah.
Fucking, it's lavender. That's all I got to say. I don't like gin. I've never liked gin. I'm not a big person of it. The company is 10th Mountain. The owner and I have said we will never make gin. The reason for that, though, is because you need a different still. You can't use the same still that you're doing to produce everything else because that gin context and flavor gets absorbed in that copper, and it stays there so, so long.
And the fact that it smells like pine salt has nothing to do with it.
Well, you know, it depends on the gin.
Not saying that, but we would probably produce a little bit better than most people.
There's a couple of like locally produced gins, juniper gins, and it pretty much is pine salt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if I was to cut myself badly, I would immediately dose the whole thing. It's like pine salt works. It cleans off my dresser, so I mean, it must work great on my skin.
Well, I got some 160 moonshine in a flask in my truck. I mean, you could try that and see where you go.
You know, that was a family business when I was a kid. My uncles ran whiskey from North Carolina into North Mississippi, which was dry. And, you know, they worked off and on for the Dixie Mafia and off and on as independent runners. And that's my favorite. I think I may have told Johnny is that my favorite memory is like being a kid and my mom standing on a porch in suburban Memphis. And my uncle pulls up in his big Pontiac, and literally, it's sitting down and it shocks. It's like right off the ground. And she goes, "I damn you, Bane, you get that goddamn tanker out from in front of this house right now. Look at it, it's sitting on the ground because it's full of whiskey." And he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, Barbara, I'll pull it around back. And he pulled the tanker around back. And he's the one who told me he's like the greatest invention of mankind on earth was the plastic gallon jug. Because in addition to the tank and the trunk, you could fill the entire back seat with gallon jugs of whiskey. You know, and it's, and then they would say, you got to respect the law, except for moonshiners who are scum. And it was like, well, gee, Dad. So there was always shine in the house. You know, and it was just really raw shine. It was just...
Yeah, but everybody wanted to drink. Nobody wanted to admit
everybody
that they
did. And my father or my grandfather would pull out, there it is, drink it.
Well, shit, my family's been doing whiskey since the 1700s.
Yeah.
I'm screwed.
Yeah, you are. It's in your genes. It's
yeah.
It comes back and haunts you.
It hasn't haunted me yet.
Scottish Dewars, right?
Yeah, Dewars.
It is in your genes.
Yep. I think I know a little bit about whiskey, mainly about drinking, but just a little bit about whiskey.
I think you start
you're saying
with drinking.
That knowledge is genetic.
At this point, I can't tell. I keep drinking.
I don't come from whiskey people. I like whiskey. But I don't know that the knowledge is genetic.
No, knowledge is not genetic.
Well, but I think that certain inherent behaviors are wired into you.
I would agree with that. Yes. And
well, I would agree with that, but at the same time, my family's been in rocket science for the last three generations. There is no whiskey in rocket science making of it.
Wait, there probably was
but
to begin with.
Be?
Well, I mean, there's chemistry in it, but they never taught me that shit.
There was probably a tremendous explosion once that had to do with whiskey and rockets.
Oh, no, there's so many.
They'd be going like, I thought it would work better than that, thus leading them into the science.
Yeah, I mean, you could talk to Skunk Works right now, and we could probably get a bunch of stories off of that.
Oh, I'm sure of it.
So.
That would be a cool thing to do. I mean, that's, you know, that was where I thought I was headed. I was going to be, I was like a physics and math guy. You know, I was the smart kid with a big mouth, and the big mouth served me better than the brains ever did.
He's got a big brain to go with the mouth, though, so it kind of works for him.
I wish.
Yeah, I mean, it does, and I just need to sit. I'm going to stop drinking, and I'm going to just sit here and shut the front door.
Chicken shit.
I can say so much more shit, but it's
you're not going to. Look at you.
No, because there has to be a an appropriate measure, especially when Michael Bain's in front of you and he remembers everybody from everywhere at any time. So there's smart comments to make, and then there's retarded comments to make. You know, which one do you want to make in front of him?
Oh, he'll remember them both. So.
Exactly.
You know what's funny is that my memory basically carried me through. I didn't have to learn anything in college. I could simply memorize it. So it's like, and then like 30 days later, it's like, geology, really? Rocks? What do I know? But as I've gotten older, you know, my memory has gone from being flawless to being flawed. And my sweetie, because she's ever sympathetic and deeply caring, said, she watched me, I was taking notes, and she goes, you're taking notes. I said, yes, and she goes, I've never seen you take notes before. I said, it's because I'm old, sweetheart, and the memory is not what it was. And she goes, so now your memory is just like everybody else. How do you like it? I said, sucks. I don't know how you stupid apes got this far.
Oh, my God. So based off of that comment, I think that's almost like the perfect ending for your podcast and how to just cut it.
Oh, this is like 3 or 4 podcasts. We're going to string this along forever.
Oh, no, I noticed. I looked at the time. We're almost at 2 hours.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I've got to lay down.
You should.
I may.
Oh, don't do that. Keep drinking.
So, yeah, I guess with that, we have rambled on here long enough, kept a somewhat conscious string.
Of what?
Of Michael Bain's consciousness.
Okay, I was just making sure it was something. That wasn't mine. It wasn't yours.
No. I'm sitting here absorbing because I'm making notes to be a professional consultant on your movie.
Oh, no, that's 100% going to happen. I have the entire script written in my head right now.
It's been fun, and I think I should close by paraphrasing the great David Allan Coe in a song of his called Cheap Thrills. And this is a paraphrase of the opening. It says, they say a man's known by the friends he keeps. All my friends are trash.
And there we have it.
Oh, that's perfect.